I think he does a lot well. I think when it comes to just natural ability from throwing the football is, I think, clearly and obvious. I think being able to understand how to get the ball out of his hands as fast as possible when it comes to the concepts we kind of just end up dialing up, but also being able to let him use his natural God-given ability at times when it's relevant. Not every play, but when it comes to especially situational ball, third down, red zone, and come alive with that.
That is new Bears offensive coordinator, former passing game coordinator. We can't really lose sight of that when we start talking about, well, now the passing game will improve. Well, he was in charge of it. Now he's just in charge of more, and he gets to actually call the plays. So maybe it means more that he's a play caller as much as it is a coordinator. And he now is in charge of making sure that Caleb Williams stops regressing and gets back to progressing. And by the way, this is so adorable.
What?
You're taking a knife and fork to eat your brats in nice little digestible pieces.
I'm a messy eater. If there is mustard, in the atmosphere, it will find a way on any of my shirts.
Oh, I will have mustard on my pants. That used to be. It was not at a baseball game until there were copious mustard stains on my pants.
Right.
So there'd be absolutely no worry. It's just you're so prim.
I don't think so. I think I'm just child-proofing myself.
I think you went to finishing school. That's what I think.
Yeah, that did not happen.
I think you were walking around with Terry's book on your head, just balanced differently to make sure
the posture
was absolutely perfect.
You know, you do want to balance stuff on your head. I think that's important.
Well, that's true from dance, right? Absolutely from dance. But what I'm saying is, please feel free to just pick up one of these things and eat it like a wolf.
Yeah, people take pictures, and that's not really my
idea. Ah, good point.
So anyway,
good point.
We are enjoying the plethora of sausage and like homemade pickles and homemade sauerkraut and all the good things at the Bratstop, and we have a big crowd building in here.
Yeah, look at
too.
This. Look at so many familiar faces too.
Yeah.
So many familiar faces. Marlon Brando's helper monkey is here. I saw Gary is here. Gary Seacrest.
Marlon Brando's helper monkey and Gary.
Well, no, Gary.
Gary, hi, Gary.
Gary used to own Diversey Rock and Bowl.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he sold it years ago.
I bowled there.
Now he sits on a pile of money on his private lake, and he goes fishing, and he gets to come up here and day drink.
And you decided to hang out with us?
Yeah, I don't want to give anything away. Sorry, no, he's not day drinking. He's enjoying nothing but orange juice. And he also...
I thought he was drinking mustard.
He is a long-time donor to Camp One Step. And also seeing... Rich here, whose wife has been a volunteer for Camp One Step for many, many, many years. It's really very special. And also wanted to send a special shout out to Jake in Belvedere, who I'm told is a little under the weather and is a big fan and is listening. So from the Bernstein and Harris Show and from Layla Rahimi, Jake, feel better. Get well soon. You're well represented out here today. So let's talk Caleb Williams. Let's first hear the latest national info from a guy who's pretty connected. Would you agree?
Yes, I think when Albert Breer speaks, we should listen. And the assessment was stark.
Yeah, there's a ton of frustration, no question. And I think a lot of this stems back to Caleb Williams not being quite as ready as they hoped he would be when the season began. That means they can't run the full offense because he doesn't have as much command at the line of scrimmage, can't make adjustments, can't use cadence as a weapon quite as much. He's holding the ball for too long. That led to frustration among the offensive linemen. He's frustrated the receivers. And the frustration has been towards the coaches. It's been back at Caleb Williams. And so they make the change this week. And one of the first things that Thomas Brown did over the course of the last few days is emphasize having full unit meetings rather than breaking into position groups. The hope is that he can bring the group together to try to find solutions.
Oh, man.
I thought that was a lot. He said that last night on the postgame show on Thursday Night Football, and I feel like it was worth the discussion.
What caught your ear?
A, cadence.
First thing I wrote down.
Because remember how when training camp started, the Bears were like, oh, cadence isn't a problem anymore. And then everybody's like, well, they say it's not a problem. But it sounds like it still very much is a problem. And their decision to go tempo would indicate that. What? What are you laughing
Nothing.
At now?
That's your voice of like, that's your basic white girl voice.
They say cadence got fixed.
I just picture you like drinking white Zinfandel near the poster that says live, laugh, love behind you.
Well, I mean, they told me everything was going to be okay. Yeah, so that's how I feel about it when it comes to whether or not cadence is still an issue for Caleb Williams. And the other part of this is, if all the position groups are that divided, why wasn't that thought of previously to put everybody in a room together?
I always pictured that happening regularly, that you would only go off to your individual rooms after the marching orders were set as a unit.
And it doesn't mean that they don't have that in place already, but to have a special emphasis on it, because let's face it, NFL Network reporters get different information than everybody else. You have to understand that. And Amazon Prime, too. If you're a rights holder, you're going to have more information than the average reporter when it comes to some of these details.
I don't want to read too much into it, but maybe that is just an admission that there has been finger pointing and grumbling. And once the door closes in a positional group, the wide receiver's like, oh, what's going on with Caleb? What can we do this? And Caleb is maybe talking to people like, guys can't get open. A lot of it leads back to Waldron. And a lot of this toxicity is wide receivers. Caleb Williams has held out of the ball in large part because wide receivers have not been open.
They haven't been open to him.
Correct. By his definition of open.
Listen, I think you and I have both seen some plays, especially the ones to me where there was DeAndre Swift in motion, where he was out maybe 3-4 yards past the line of scrimmage, where that was a specific play designed for him, and he was open, and both times he didn't get read. You know, there's something there to this, but then the other piece of that is Breer specifically saying the offensive line is frustrated because he's holding on to the ball too long.
Offensive linemen say basically, we'll hold them off for 2.5 to 3 seconds.
3 seconds is the luxury. Yeah, anything standard.
Anything past that is on you. It's sort of like in what they always say about goalies in hockey. Stop the first one, if it's not a terrible rebound, the defense should be able to take care of that second. Like that puck should be out of there. It's the goalie's job to make that first stop.
Right.
And if the defense is where they should be, there shouldn't be an opportunity for a follow-up.
Now, if that's happening, why isn't the pocket moving more? Why aren't you utilizing play action? Why aren't you rolling out if you're a young guy who can run? Hopefully that gets addressed.
When you've had clear, measurable success with the boot actions they've had.
Right.
Well, they've had that. This is unfortunately, I hate to do it. It's back to the Matt Nagy stuff. And I mentioned the other day that somebody showed me on Blue Sky, which, by the way, if you are getting onto Blue Sky like a lot of people are, it's just a haven of social media sanity.
You mean it's not a bunch of people with replies about why aren't you doing something, mental gymnastics?
No, it really hasn't been. And no bots and no ads, and it's been great.
You've gotten all my impressions out of the way.
No, your dad has to have a Lakers thought at some point. But I'm at Dan Bernstein. Just like, I'm pretty sure that's just it. At Dan Bernstein, you can find me there. And the conversation's been really good, actually. So I read that we had, God, how is it put about the air yards where Caleb Williams has been throwing into tight windows and relatively well, but because of the timing, he's making the windows tighter.
Yeah.
The idea would be that with some of the designs that have been there, the longer he waits, and then it shortens the decision-making time, and then you start to get confused.
You're starting to, you see it on the comeback routes. You especially see it on the perimeters. But that's why, again, just take it down a notch then. Put somebody over the middle. I don't know, maybe Cole Kmet.
If there's a lot of man, and where they're going to see a lot of man, there has been a lot of man. The Patriots were uncharacteristically man-heavy. We know, a high school coach can tell you, pick routes. The little rubs and crosses, mesh concepts.
Best friend for a quarterback.
Man beaters and bunch formations. When you start putting them in a diamond or in stacks, that is a way to beat man coverage. I heard Matt Bowen talk about it yesterday. And when it comes to some of the zones as well, remove and replace, run out and replace. Where somebody carries a safety down a seam, and underneath you establish someone else in that layer.
Now listen, there's an aspect of this. We brought up the Packers. They're only giving up 113 yards a game on the ground. That puts them in the upper quartile of run defenses, actually. Maybe just outside it. But it's not going to be...
Ursae math?
It's not going to be this broadstop smorgasbord of run the ball. But I still think they have to do so in order to have a chance. The best test we have for the Bears coming up is simply the first drive of the game that they get offensively.
Which is always terrible.
Right. If you're getting a first down progress will have been made.
I thought Eric Washington said it when he was talking about the Packers, is that they skip third down. They go first down, second down, first down. That's what really good offenses do generally when you have a seven-yard run on first down.
Right. Yeah, that's how you draw it up. You draw it up so you don't have to have a third and situation.
And the Bears have third and 8, third and 9, third and 13, and then somebody jumps off sides and it's third and 18.
But Albert Breer says that, and he talks about cadence, and what do we see? We see pre-snap penalties. That's the problem, is so many things relate to that one piece of information.
Bears quarterbacks coach Kerry Joseph was asked yesterday about how the risk calculation is going to be made about Caleb Williams balancing his aggressiveness and shot-taking with not throwing picks.
You know, I just try to always encourage, hey, let's be aggressive. Let's be aggressive, but be smart. You know, let's be aggressive, let's be smart. And that's the message that I've started from day one, and I continue to deliver. So now, hey, let's pull the trigger, let's be smart about it, but be aggressive at the same time.
Has Caleb been doing too much at the line? Obviously, he's adept enough and smart enough to make a lot of changes to the line, but has it been too much the past few weeks?
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. Caleb is very smart. We just got to help our offense, like you say, to put us in a better situation, and we just got to play better. You know, we just got to play better collectively. And we just got to stay ahead of the change. The NFL, you don't stay ahead of the change, it's hard. You know, it's hard.
So he's making good decisions? He's making good decisions at the line?
He's making good decisions at the line. We got to help him. And, like, now just, hey, just get the ball out of his hand. You know, slow his eyes down so he sees things a little bit better. Wants post-snap. You know, but, you know, at the line of scrimmage, things that we've asked him to do, he's done a great job with it.
All right, I don't like some of that. I like the detail at the end, and I'm glad that Grody followed up in the way that he did. So the question was, basically, how can he be aggressive and smart? And the answer was, well, I tell him to be aggressive and smart. Let's be aggressive. Let's be smart. Obviously. But how? The coach's job is to take it from the words to the how. Of course you want him to be both aggressive and smart. Well, I just tell him, be aggressive and smart. Thanks.
No, that's just him. You know what that is. It's him telling you he doesn't want to give away information.
How should he be aggressive and smart? How does he learn how to be aggressive and smart?
I think he thinks he's doing it when he's at the line of scrimmage and he's audibling. I think he thinks he's doing that. And there was a point that Cynthia Freeland brought up with our show about the responsibility and what the Bears are asking of him. And I feel like given all the information we've received, it's worth bringing back.
Caleb Williams is coming along. You know, he needs a little help around him from the structure standpoint, from the types of plays that, you know, I remember if we close our eyes and remember back in the day when Dak Prescott was coming out, even though he was a fifth rounder, et cetera, like, you know, when he was forced to take over after injury, no one asked him to throw outside the numbers for a long time. No one asked him to throw deep for a long time. Well, that's not been the case for Caleb Williams. He's had to do all of those things right from the jump. That is what happens when you are 1.01, the very first pick. But you have to see the trajectory rolls out a little bit more slowly. Like, there's nothing wrong with Caleb Williams. He's awesome. You have your quarterback. It's going to get better and better and better. It just, there needs to be a little bit of help around it. And by the way, it doesn't make anything easier that the NFC North is the most competitive division in all of football this season, as opposed to some other seasons where it maybe would have been a little bit more achievable to win now.
That's interesting, to the 1.01, that his pedigree and his standing, do you think that resulted in the Bears, frankly, overrating him? As weird as that sounds?
Not necessarily overrating him, but expecting him to do everything. And that's something that I've talked about on this station, broadcasting through the Hyundai studios. For how long? That doesn't just go back to Caleb Williams, but that was my main concern.
I don't think that's necessarily bad. If you trust your structure, which they don't have. They fired their offensive. They interviewed 9 offensive coordinators, and they ended up hiring a doofus. And that sets them back. It's okay to ask, if you trust the teachers and you get people ready to say, this season could be rocky. We might end up winning a Super Bowl because we take a little step back in the one-loss record, or we a little underachieved this season, but we're going to get closer to winning a Super Bowl because we're going to give this kid everything. And once he figures it out, watch out.
But what have we said? We've argued for easing him into the offense. We've argued. I've argued.
Not all the time.
I've argued for teaching him 101, even though he's very good. He'll be to 201 quickly. And now you're seeing this regression, which we also know is typical. You see that happen in a rookie season. But now the question becomes, how is he getting out of it? And that's why all of this information is worthy of discussion. They decided that the offensive coordinator wasn't good enough. Well, what does that mean for the next person? But here's the other thing, Dan. They trust their process, and we have no reason to.
I don't.
That's it. Yeah. What about their process and time to prepare has told you that this is sound? I am happy that they are changing it. That's what you need to do. You can't be completely egotistical and say that what we're doing is working. Changes be damned. What they're doing is at least adjusting. But I don't have enough confidence in their process and their evaluation to be able to confidently say, I think that this is going to get better in a way that benefits everybody over the next few games.
That's Layla Rahimi. I'm Dan Bernstein. This is the Bernstein and Harris Show. And because this is a Friday, it doesn't matter that we are here at the Brat Bowl or the Mitch Bowl at the Brat Stop in Kenosha, because we are still going to have Joe Ostrowski on next to give you everything you need to know to maximize your wagertainment value when we come back on The Score.
Joe Ostrowski, host of BetQL Daily on the BetQL Network.
That's a lot of value on a very talented team.
Getting you ready for your wagertainment weekend.
These underdogs are just hitting at an insane rate.
Joe Ostrowski.
Oh, yeah, he's got a lot of Herbert Hoover in him.
With Bernstein and Harris. On The Score.
Joe Ostrowski is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866 Four Seasons. He's with us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. He is the host of BetQL Daily and BetMGM Game Day. And twitch.tv/Chicago670 Score is where you can see him. Joe, how are you?
Good. I'm curious what Layla's doing. She's the smart one. She was hammering the under last week. She was telling everybody, you've got to go under. That thing was like good to go in the first half of the game. Let's do a segment.
I'm getting
Layla's
applause for this.
Sports betting. Yes.
Guys, we want points. You want points to be scored in games. The under last week was one of the lowest in the NFL this season, set at 40. It's not good that it happened. It's only good that we profited and met some friends along the way. I'm not confident this week either, Joe. Back to you.
Oh, man. Well, somebody is. Because midweek, when the limits opened up, meaning the sports books say on Wednesdays usually, okay, we'll take bigger bets now. We'll take bigger bets. Once they did that, they started to bet the Bears.
That was fighting words here at the Brat Stop. Is that why 6.5 became 5.5?
Exactly why. Exactly why. It was going between 5 and 5.5, but right now on Friday, it is 5.5 just about everywhere. That's it. This line is so interesting because a point spread is made on every game before the season starts. And before the year started, the Bears were actually favored in this game. It was Bears -1. And then you go to last week. Remember, Green Bay didn't play. It was only the Bears. Before the Bears-Patriots game, it was Green Bay -2.5. Just off of the result of the Bears, think of that movement. It moved 4 points. Not off injury, just based on how bad that they ended up playing. But, obviously some Bears money did come in. I will say I think part of that is because anytime there is change, coaching changes, that is bet on. It was bet on last week with the Saints interim coach. They bet on the Jets when they fired Saleh earlier this year. They bet on the Bills last year when they made the change at OC. They bet on the Browns earlier this year when they gave the play-calling duties to Dorsey, taking them away from Stefanski or whoever decided to make that change. They do bet on the change. They bet on a one-week bump. So I'm sure that's what much of the reasoning for those bets was.
Joe, I'm more concerned about the run game for both teams, knowing that we wanted to see the Bears run against poor run defenses. That didn't happen enough. Packers don't give up that many yards a game. And a friend asked me for some advice, and given the Bears' run defense, I said take the over with Josh Jacobs. It was 95.
Yeah. If for rushing yards, what is the number at? Is it,
was,
is that
well,
what you're
the
saying,
one that
95?
He gave me was 95. And I felt like that was I feel like that over can hit. Or I'm sorry, 75. But I feel like he could get 95, actually, and that would still...
75 is all it is for Josh Jacobs?
Yeah, he said Josh Jacobs over 90, over 75 yards rushing. I'm like, yeah, he got over 90 last game. That's where I got the 90 from. And I said the Bears are gashed in run defense. I feel like that's still a good bet, unfortunately.
It's 70 and a half now. So that seems like a very low number. Depending how you think it's going to go, if they're playing from out in front, yeah, you would expect Josh Jacobs to get a lot of carries. That number is at 16 and a half, and he should be able to be just fine. It's 70 and a half. So, yeah, I would think that one certainly makes sense.
There are some other games in the NFL this week that are worthy of hype. All of these Pittsburgh and Baltimore games have been tremendous, and then we've got our Kansas City and Buffalo showdown. With Buffalo, actually, the last I saw, they were favored, and I don't think anybody is surprised.
Yeah, not too much. Buffalo, the home team, so they're basically saying that these teams are just about even on a neutral field. When we watch the Chiefs every week, and it happened again last week, how do they keep doing it? They barely survived against Denver, but they keep on winning, sitting 9-0. So we're in one of these rare opportunities. You've got Patrick Mahomes as an underdog. That has happened 14 times. Patrick Mahomes has not covered the spread once in those 14 games when he's been an underdog. He's 11-3 straight up, 12-1-1 against the spread. So a lot of people are just blindly betting that and saying, hey, that's a good look. I'm just going to bet on Mahomes until I stop cashing on those wagers. The injuries, big for the Buffalo Bills. Kincaid has not been practicing this week, their tight end, and that's massive because Kansas City is the worst at defending that position in the NFL. Keon Coleman is out. We don't know about Amari Cooper. So that news is going to be big. And then Butker yesterday, we find out he goes on IR out of nowhere.
Aww.
That was hilarious.
Really?
But he's won so many games for them with big kicks at the end. Yeah, the internet was all over that.
Yeah, he can have some time to be barefoot in the kitchen and bake a cake.
Yes. There were a lot of reactions. What if Butker's doctor is a female? how is he going to respond?
Oh no!
Is it his mother though?
What if he needs surgery and the surgeon is an overpromoted, undeserving woman? Whatever will he do?
Yes, I, for one, enjoy living the lie, and I would like to continue my work day by asking you about Baltimore and Pittsburgh.
Yes, that one. The point spread is 3. Some places you can find 3.5. Maybe that's surprising to some because of how the Ravens looked against the Bengals and just what Lamar has done this season. But in this matchup, just take the underdog. In the last 20 years, when the underdog is getting 3 points or more, they cover 85% of the time. They're typically low-scoring games, even though this is a high total. Since the offenses are looking good and the Ravens' pass defense is just horrendous. But it always ends up being a one-possession game. So Steelers and the points, that's what I'm thinking there.
Do you think Northwestern can cover the spread against Ohio State?
Good Lord. They needed overtime for Purdue.
Purdue has not had a good year.
Purdue's awful. Awful. They're one of the worst teams in the country. So, I'm not lining up for that one. It's been a bad few weeks, getting smoked by Iowa and Wisconsin as well. And on the Ohio State side, maybe if you're hoping that they can cover the 28.5 or whatever the number is right now, is maybe Ohio State is looking ahead to next week, because that's what the college football world is talking about, that game next week, Indiana and Ohio State. Indiana needs to win if they want to make the playoff. They're sitting 10-0 in the season. That number's 10.5. You could already bet into that game. That's what everybody's waiting on. And of course, Travis Hunter conversation. He's the favorite now. It's taken a while, but he's the favorite to win the Heisman. The chatter being with 3 games left, if they can win one, because that was the reason a lot of people were saying they wouldn't vote for Travis Hunter. Well, he's on a bad team. They're not going to have a great record. They already have 7 wins in pocket with 3 games left. So, yeah, certainly in college,
so
that's what people are
Genty's second, though, right?
Genty, No, Gabriel's been second, I believe.
Gabriel's second. Wow.
Yeah, Gabriel's second, undefeated team, in the arguably the best conference. With the SEC.
It's not a great Heisman race. It isn't. And I can tell you, as a voter, I can't tell you which way I'm leaning, but just this has not been a compelling Heisman season.
Is it because you don't have a quarterback battle at the top?
Maybe. Maybe. And I just, my expectations were that Jalen Milroe would be much more involved and dynamic. I don't know. Not having him as part of the discussion has kind of changed things.
I thought there would be a move on Jackson Dart when they pulled off the upset of Georgia last week. And if you look at his numbers, pretty much all the metrics, he's in top three with every quarterback stat. But really, no move on Jackson Dart. He's 20-1. And yes, Gentry's third. It seems to be a three-player race. Hunter, Gabriel, Gentry, and then there's a bit of a drop-off to Cam Ward.
Any interesting betting props for the Tyson and Paul fight tonight?
It's actually unbelievable. If you talk to the odds makers, the amount of money that they're getting on this is crazy.
Why?
And some people
I believe it.
Yeah. Is it what people want to see? Because I'll tell you what they're betting right now. People are betting on Tyson. Nonstop. They just can't stop betting on Tyson. And you have to remember that the rules are different. It's 8 rounds. It's 2 minutes instead of 3, and they have the bigger gloves. But Paul is the favorite, -190 at BetMGM. That number keeps coming down because they keep on betting Tyson. The favorite is getting only 15% of the tickets. And a lot of the odds makers will tell you, we can't stop the action on Tyson. It is unbelievable. We cannot stop it nonstop. But when they get the six-figure bets, they're on Paul.
Wait, did you say bigger gloves?
Yes, which means a knockout is less likely.
So like a throw pillow, something you put on a couch.
Do you remember the inflatable ones we had? What do they call them? Boppers? Like remember when we were kids?
We used to like tie pillows to
bought them. They were inflatable. Like they looked like gumdrops. There were two blue ones and there were two red ones. And you blew them up just like a floaty device. And you'd stick your hand in them. And then you'd punch each other with them until you got bored.
That sounds awesome, actually.
It was kind of awesome. What were they called?
Sock'em boppers?
It wasn't Rock'em Sock'em. That was the robots. It was like Socko boppers or something.
So we would also just like unzip the toss pillow cover. And then you put your hand inside it.
Yes.
Go at people.
Yeah, Shane says it's Sock'em Boppers. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, Nate on Twitch is also saying that.
That's so lame that they're using pillow gloves.
Is this just people nostalgic because they couldn't bet on Tyson when he was active?
Back in the day? Yeah.
Right.
I know.
This is a new generation.
Is it going to be like Mayweather-McGregor where there's all this hype and it's really not that close? I'm not sure that it's that. It's just, what do you expect to happen? I'll tell you the three most popular bets at BetMGM. Number one, Mike Tyson by knockout or DQ, +250. Number two most popular bet, Mike Tyson on points. Number three, Mike Tyson to win in round one at 14-1.
Points is second?
Yes. Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, because they're using pillows.
Yeah. Well, that's why people are betting the over on the rounds, over five and a half rounds.
Stupid.
I'm staying
out there
for this
fight
garbage.
With feathers. This is ridiculous. All right, Joe Ostrowski, thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
Bye, guys.
This segment brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. When we return, it is high noon. I'm not going to bring you down, but there were two passings in the past week that I have been meaning to mention and to say nice things about some people you should know who are no longer with us.
Oh, yeah? Well, I have a guy who faked his death, and he's alive.
Death, death, death. That's coming next if you keep it here on The Score.
Beep.
The Bernstein and Harris Show.
Sexy football with Matt Bowen.
I was listening to you guys on the radio one afternoon.
You should be. Everybody should.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
It is high noon on a very special day for the Bernstein and Harris Show and for The Score, because we are here at the Brat Stop for the Brat Bowl, and we have been broadcasting our entire show. Spiegel and Holmes will be broadcasting later. And all of this, yeah.
I know, we have a great crowd today.
Fabulous crowd, especially for this time of day. It's just great. You know what? Tell your boss, I've done this before, I'm writing you a note. Unless you're like flying a medevac helicopter or something, tell your boss you're coming here. You know, just tell him Bernstein said it's okay. That you're taking the rest of the day off, and I cleared you, and that I'm signing your absence note and take it to the. If you're a kid, you can go to the office and just say Bernstein said it's cool. And this is all brought to you by Ziegler Subaru of Kenosha.
See,
you're doing what you do.
Somebody had to do it.
It's all brought to you by Ziegler Subaru of Kenosha. For a great experience, visit ZieglerSubaru.com and Pottawatomie Sportsbook. We've talked a lot of Bears. We talked to Sparky Pfeiffer and to Joe Ostrowski.
And Big Cat Williams is joining us.
He will.
It's
all right. We all know the wonderful story of Not Dead Guy. But this caught me, and I thought it was appropriate to read since we are across state lines. Wisconsin. What happened with the missing father who allegedly faked a kayaking accident and fled to Europe? Yeah.
What did happen?
Well, apparently he's in Europe.
So it's not allegedly.
Why are you doing this? Why are you so conflict avoidant that you decide to throw your family away and fake your own death because you can't actually say what you want to do?
Because he probably has another family in Europe.
Be a grown up. Yeah, actually, that's kind of the case. So this is a story, and some of you at the Broad Stop may know it, of a man named Ryan Borgwart. And he faked a kayak accident at Green Lake. That was back in August. So his car was left there and the kayak was turned over because, you know, you got to do that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Except the problem is if you're going to leave anywhere, you probably have to have some identification. And Canadian officials confirmed that he had obtained a new passport. But it wasn't before three cadaver dogs and a dive team were brought in to help for the search. So here the state is using all of their resources and the sheriff is trying to help out this poor family. And these kids who think they're missing their dad. He's got kids and a wife, and instead, they find out that he has faked his own death. Officials say evidence suggests he may
have faked his own disappearance and then left the country for Europe.
They said that his passport was run on August 13th.
Find him, drag him back.
And that the quote is from the sheriff, "We found out that he moved funds to a foreign bank, changing his email." That always will do it, let me tell you.
You outsmarted him now.
"And communication with a woman from Uzbekistan."
Told you.
"Due to these discoveries of new evidence, we were sure that Ryan was not in our lake." And it's just a sad story. They're trying to see what happened
to the guy. He's not in our lake. He may be in the other lake over there, but he's judging from this, he's not in our lake.
He's got multiple kids. They're school age, and he just decides to turn his kayak over because he can't face the truth. So if any of you guys up here in these parts find this dude, I think you should give him a what for scene.
Last week, a couple of significant people passed away with ties to Chicago, and I want to say, you know, personally as well, if you've ever heard the name Ella Jenkins, who was referred to as the first lady of children's music, which she really was, she passed away in Chicago, and I always answer when somebody says, "What's the first concert you ever went to in your life?" The answer was Ella Jenkins at Ravinia when I was 3. And my mom bought her albums, and we grew up. Now there's any number of fabulous children's music performers and creators, but really one way or another in the modern era, many of them stem from Ella Jenkins herself, who was just a brilliant and gentle soul, who was, if you read a lot of the wonderful obituaries, her inspirations in American folk tradition and in the Black church and in the civil rights movement itself, just help bring a lot of joy and comfort to a lot of kids of all backgrounds and cultures to whom she was able to reach out. So I was a little sad. Happy that she lived to 100 years old. And I can say that she, at a very, very young age, she always brought a smile to my face with the first children's music performer that I remember experiencing. Secondly, I was very sad when I saw that Billy Lawless died at age 73. Billy Lawless, a longtime pub owner. I should mention Billy Lawless Sr. Billy Jr. is still all well and good and making fabulous food across Chicago. But Billy Lawless Sr. was not only a well-known pub and restaurant owner, but also an immigration activist, particularly what he learned about the difficulties that his fellow Irish people had in the city of Chicago. He's a Galway native. And now that I've been to Galway and I've had such a fabulous time in Galway, it made me appreciate Billy Lawless all that much more. And they say, well, how do you know him? Do you remember when I used to talk about my guys at the gym? My guys in the steam room.
I do remember you fondly talking about
the steam room. I always talked about the old guys in the steam room at Lincoln Park Athletic Club. And Billy was the mayor of the old guys in the steam room. And he would sit, and he had this glorious Galwegian accent, and would rail against the powers that be, and against at any time I toast with my friends and say death to tyrants. You talk about somebody who would rail against the bad guys for all the right reasons with such a glorious righteous fury. It was Billy Lawless, who was a wonderful Chicago pub owner and restaurateur, and a really important man in a lot of ways, and a really nice guy. So if you're going to have a pint here today or somewhere tonight, maybe you're coming over to see Patrick Manley having a pint of his Long Snapper IPA, raise a glass and say a cheers to the memory of Billy Lawless. That is High Noon, and Kevin Fishbane will delve into some Bears fishy business with us next on The Score.